Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, joined today by Makone Maja. Let's get into the news of today, and this is once again a story that's moving so fast that by the time you listen to this, it may be a little bit out of date, but hopefully not. Negotiations continue to drag on with the Government of National Unity, with the DA and ANC seemingly not seeing eye to eye on a whole bunch of things. The deal isn't called off yet, but it really seems to be getting down to the wire. Ramaphosa was expected that he may have announced the cabinet this afternoon, but there seem to have been further problems in the negotiations, which were looked like they were going in a positive direction yesterday evening. So apparently, the ANC offered last night that the DA could have six ministerial positions, along with seven deputy ministerial positions, and that one of the key industries that the DA would get would be trade, industry, and competition. Now, this is a ministry that was formerly controlled by Ibrahim Patel. And in my opinion, he has been one of the most destructive ministers in the history of South African politics. He pursued some really terrible policy ideas that have caused a lot of damage to this country. So, seeing that change hands out of the ANC's hands, I think would be a very good move for the country. That's my thoughts, at least. But anyway, the ANC apparently made this offer. And then Ramaphosa had a meeting with the National Executive Committee of the ANC, where, according to some reporting, now this is where it gets a little bit confusing, is depending on which news story you read at which point in the day, we're getting a slightly different picture of what happened. But let's try and kind of piece something together here. It looks like the NEC basically said to Ramaphosa that they couldn't possibly give this portfolio to the DA, that it was too strategic and that it would result in, quote, pushing back levers on of economic redress, according to Business Day reporting. So this has caused the DA to get very upset because apparently Ren Ramaphosa went back to the DA and said, well, no, you can't have trade and industry, but you can have tourism. A DA source told Business Day that they have had to swallow a number of concessions, including taking a back seat on the Speaker of the National Assembly, the inclusion of the likes of fan casts, I'm not sure entirely what that refers to, in the National Executive, and a possible huge compromises in the appointment of the Gauteng Provincial Executive. We are done. Enough is enough. You basically, they've told the ANC to go back to the Wednesday deal or not. The ANC has hit back, with President Ramaphosa writing a letter to the DA, attacking them for a whole bunch of things. He accuses them of moving the goalposts in negotiations, and wanting to set up a, quote, illegal parallel government which would operate outside the parameters of the Constitution. Ramaphosa has accused the DA of asking for eight ministerial positions after he had offered them six. And then basically, the implication I seem to be getting from this is that because the DA didn't accept the six, the ANC took trade and industry off the table, which is a slightly different story. Ramaphosa also complained that too much of the negotiations was being done in writing. He said, quote, matters of national importance such as these are best conducted in face-to-face negotiations and only where both sides agree between them that they have reached a level of maturity in advance should they be reduced to writing to live up to the principle of transparency. He noted that this could result in media leaks and parties playing to the gallery of public opinion instead of holding good faith negotiations. Now, on that point, Makona, I do kind of agree that when things are in writing, as we have seen over the last 48 hours, things get leaked a lot. But at the same time, I understand where the DA is coming from, wanting to do a lot of things in writing. They don't want to agree to something and then suddenly have a different outcome emerge on the other side, which very much seems to be what happened in the first round of negotiations. At least that's my impression. So I've just said a lot. What's your take on any and all of this?
Written contractual agreements do tend to be more binding than verbal ones. So I can also see the DA's perspective. I've also been pondering how much of this should we be seeing happening in public, because I secretly enjoy getting all the news and the updates about the negotiations and the intricacies and the fighting between the DA and the ANC, and actually think that negotiations for political power are worthwhile. And so I want to see parties going at it, in good faith, of course. Although again, I'm a bit conflicted about how much of it should be taking place in public, or how much of it should be made available to the public afterwards. That of course means you and I, Nick, can't do our jobs, and so that would be rather unfortunate if we
Look,
got none of it.
On that point specifically, I completely agree that, after the case, we should definitely, I think, get a really good idea in the public of what was agreed upon by the parties. But I have the controversial and somewhat anti-populist view that politicians really shouldn't negotiate in public, because the moment that the public can see what politicians are doing, they suddenly start acting up and playing to their constituencies, and then they tend to not make very wise decisions.
That's true. It tends to become performative rather than like of substance. And so I tend to agree with you on that. I think that we've seen markets respond to this specifically. I think markets are responding to whether that trade ministerial position will go to the DA or to the ANC, because of course the DA will append the ANC's protectionist trade policies and liberate the markets. So we're seeing how consequential a lot of these negotiations are as the rand continues to slip and slip, with more news that the negotiations have become rather acrimonious. We're seeing a lot of responses to the negotiations, both from the public and the markets themselves. I'm also observing the power of the NEC, which is something that I mentioned to you earlier. I think we've always sort of understand the shadowy power that they hold in the ANC, because ANC presidents famously never complete their second terms because the NEC removes them. And now we're seeing through these negotiations that they play deeper roles in shaping of policy and now in shaping of parliament. And you can understand why. There are fewer positions for members of the NEC, and I don't think that they could have anticipated this when the 2019, I think that's when the last, stand to be corrected, NEC was held, National Executive Committee meeting was held and voted.
I think it was the... It wasn't at the 2017. I'm pretty sure they've got a long term. I'm also forgetting now. The ANC's internal stuff is a bit mush in my mind.
Maybe in 2021.
I think that's correct. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
It's 2021.
You're seeing the dynamic between the NEC and the president remind me a little bit of, allow me to say, like 17th century British politics relationship between the parliament and the king, where the parliament has enough power to restrain the king, to sanction the king to death, which they've done, which the NEC is sort of playing a similar role. And I've enjoyed seeing that dynamic. And I hope that that will come to parliament, that parliament will be, our parliament, I mean, be given enough power to actually restrain and uphold rule of law, right? So I've really enjoyed observing all these relationships, but especially the dynamic between the NEC and its president, and seeing how much farther it goes outside of just the fact that they somewhat shape policy. And we see this from their like conference papers, and also, which has sort of been fuzzy for me, but also that the presidents never complete their second terms also because of the NEC. But now that they are sort of a third party in, and a big third party too, in shaping of national coalitions.
So I think one of the things that has really been, I think, at the root of why Ramaphosa has essentially continued on and in fact introduced more radical policies in some directions, negatively radical policies, like the expropriation bill, is because he effectively failed, I think, to wrangle the NEC. In my mind, there was a real opportunity for Ramaphosa after he defeated Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. Yes, he had that pretty, it was pretty tense. The balance of forces was in many ways against him, but he slowly stamped his control of the party in some ways. But in a lot of ways, he also made concessions. For example, all of the mucking about and letting Zuma basically go free was an example of that. The fact that Ace Magashule seems to still be around, even if he was no longer the ANC Secretary General. And one really gets the sense that Ramaphosa never actually took the opportunity to stamp his authority on the NEC and make it his NEC. He very much was willing to be the NEC's favorite champion. And so the status quo remained in most ways. Ramaphosa, rather than being the promised change agent, remained very much an agent of the status quo. And I think we're really now seeing that, regardless of whether these negotiations actually go forward, at this point, it really is beginning to look like the DA might step out of these things, in which case the ANC is going to have to make a lot of extra hard choices. I think Ramaphosa's appeasement of the NEC rather than his sort of confrontation and combating of it has definitely weakened him. He could have transformed the ANC into something more like a normal political party. When the entire party's NEC is against you, or you know the DA has its own version, I think the Federal Executive Committee and also the Federal Council, when those are against you, yes, it's very difficult for any political leader to do things. But it's not like Ramaphosa is completely alone on these things. It seems like he's endlessly trying to seek consensus above all else. And I think that fundamentally has made him a weak leader, just quite frankly. I think in many ways he's just tried to ride the wave rather than directing things himself. I don't know, Makone, do you agree? Do you disagree? What's your thoughts?
I think so. I think he was trying to be agreeable to sort of stop more bleeding happening within the ANC and to stop the internal fractions within the NEC, within the ANC from further severing strong loyalties to the party within the party. And that didn't turn out so good for him. In fact, it seems he sort of,
even get ANC unity with MK breaking away.
Exactly. His weaknesses were definitely exposed that way in his, it seems at least from the outside, trying to be agreeable to the party to bring it back has only been at the great expense of his own political career and his own political power being restrained by the NEC that he still has not gained, it seems, a lot of favor from.
So, yeah, I guess the question is what next? If the DA does accept this, does eventually agree to something, it's clear that these negotiations, I think, have shown how fraught the relationship is between the two parties. And I think the question of whether it is going to last for the entire five-year term is a very open one. It's going to be a lot of effort to build trust, and it's going to require a lot of goodwill from both parties, which, if the negotiations are anything to go by, I don't think is necessarily going to happen. And at the same time, if the DA steps away from this, what's the ANC going to do? In theory, they have enough parties in part of the Government of National Unity to run the government without the DA, but not really. They'll have like 202 seats at maximum, which will be an absolute nightmare to get anything done. Any single party that defects could cause problems for them. If they don't get all their MPs to parliament, which is very common for the ANC, they won't be able to pass legislation. So in that case, it's a real crisis, which leaves them the opportunity of maybe going to the EFF or MK. But doing a deal with the devil in that sense, giving into the ANC's sort of ideological comfort zone, will have very serious consequences. And we can already see the beginning rumblings of that. And I think the way that the business community will react, the sort of more moderate sectors of South African society, I don't think will actually forgive the ANC for an agreement with the MK or EFF. I may be wrong, but that is the feeling I have. And the ANC perhaps fears that, which is why they've sought out an alliance with the DA to begin with. Makone, your thoughts on that?
On the point of the ANC basically remaining in limbo, should it not be able to strike a deal with the DA and then sort of just exist in the middle throughout its GNU and not being able to pass any legislation? I think the president is sort of looking at that maybe and thinking he's damned if he does and damned if he doesn't, in the sense that he strikes a deal with the devil and the NEC is aggrieved, but at least they get things done. And the country will probably thank him for it and hopefully redeem him so for his reputation so far. But if he doesn't, then he's in the good books of the ANC, and that seems to matter a lot, carries a lot of currency to the president, how he comes across to the NEC, and then he's in their good books, and that says something, I guess, maybe towards restoring fractured alliances within the ANC, which he seems to deeply care about and prioritize constantly when he's at the crossroads, having to choose between what's in the best interest of the country versus the party.
Indeed. So I think that's a wrap for today. Like I said, this news is moving so fast that if you're listening to this on Thursday morning, we may well have been completely, on Friday morning, we may well have been completely passed by events. See, I'm already losing track of the day. But anyway, I hope that this was interesting to you guys. And all I can say for today is that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.